Welcome everyone to the Workforce Navigator podcast. I'm Steve McDonald, your host, and we have a phenomenal conversation today. We're going to be talking about predictive models and creating high performance teams inside of organizations. And we have on here Mawalem Nainonane. And if I said that right, then we've already hit success here. So please correct me when you started up if I didn't. But the idea here is you're taking an engineering background and you've conducted a series of experiments that over time built on each other to get to the point where you have a predictive model that you're firmly behind that helps drive those high performance teams and attracting those into an organization. So I don't know how to really explain much more than that other than turn it over to you to really do it justice. If you wouldn't mind just start out, maybe explain a little bit more about your background before we dig in, and then we're going to start talking about this predictive model, what it is.
Perfect. Steve, thank you so much. My name is Mawalem Nainonane, and you were 99% of the way there. In terms of who I am, I was educated as a biomedical engineer with a focus in mechanics. I spent about a little bit over half a decade working for DOD, essentially creating repeatable systems to qualify manufacturing sites all around the U.S. Fun fact, I've been to all but 9 states during that time. And from there, I made the transition to recruiting. And because I had so many old school wise thinkers around me, I was urged to learn it from the bottom up. I cut my teeth on a contract with Google and found my way to my first startup, Thumbtack. And since then, I've built 2 organizations myself, focused on essentially supporting organizations as they build repeatable systems for recruiting, as well as being the first talent leader for a number of companies, including LTSC and a number of others, advising founders. But overall, the system has been the same, is to leverage first principles reasoning to solve problems. And in this case, the problem is building, hiring, high-performing teams.
So I'm just going to have us dive right into that. So you've obviously stirred a lot of curiosity. Explain just the basic concept, like, in layman's terms, what is this high performance model? How does it work? Why should we be believers in this? This is new territory for us. So take it easy on us, but if you can explain it in a way we can understand, I'd appreciate it.
So a high performance model is something that actually came out of my work during my tenure at BetterUp, where I was asked to grow a team diversely. And I'm not sure if you know this, but not many people like to be considered a diversity hire. And so my approach was, let's build a system that qualifies candidates consistently, let's set expectations with candidates, and let's increase where we find candidates, and thereby increasing our chances of growing the team with representation. And it worked. From there, the next experiment left a few things out, and I realized that in the ever-changing world of startups, as well as in tenured organizations, without proper expectations, it's quite challenging to build high-performing teams. So it's not just about consistently attracting, qualifying, and bringing people in, but it's about setting the proper expectations and measuring their performance over time in a structured manner that's transparent.
So it all sounds incredible. If you wouldn't mind explaining a little bit of just nothing proprietary or anything, but how a predictive model works and why we should have faith in this, because it sounds really great on the outset, but we're just trying to understand, especially the application in the world of HR and talent acquisition and everything. Like, what's important about this model? How does it look at these high performance teams over time, the data that it uses? How does this all come together?
So first and foremost, you should not have faith in it. And I say that wholeheartedly in the sense that it should be earned continuously. One of the individuals that I look up to in the startup world, fun fact, I've never seen him make the same mistake twice. He highlighted that trust was continuously earned. So this model is the evolution of a number of systems that I've developed. And the way it works is really similar to how your car works. Think about my first car, which was my mother's car, a light blue 1993 Toyota Camry. I love that car. Why? Because it always turned on, no matter what. I remember the first time I left the indoor lights on and I went outside that morning, saw them, was surprised. I learned in auto tech that that drains the battery. I turned the ignition, the car turned on. So the car is reliable. There are systems that were built in to ensure that operation. So with recruiting, when you build a system that takes all of the critical aspects of hiring, ensures that they're consistent, builds gauges so you actually know what's going on. For example, if, let's say, top of funnel, your response rates are below 20%, you have a gauge that tells you that, similar to a speedometer. You can do two things. You can change or A/B test your messages. You can adjust the groups that you're reaching out to. And all of that provides actionable steps similar to brakes and gas pedal to ensure that you can optimize for where you want to go. So if you build a structured process, you have the gauges in the right places, you're able to look at not only where you are, but where you want to go. There is a mathematical model that ensures that the outcomes are predictive. And again, there's actually nothing proprietary here. This is simply work that I've done that has yielded results, and I actually share what I learned. I've been extremely fortunate in my professional erudition that I met a lot of mentors and folks that have just freely shared what they're working on and have allowed me to learn and iterate their work. And so everything I've learned, and a bit old school, I've kept a document, or you can call it a scientific notebook, of the past experiments. I was really hesitant to share them until I had some results. And now that I do, I've started to share those on Medium and via LinkedIn newsletter. So on a biweekly basis, everything that's been built within the next, let's say, half a year, all of the articles will be posted and newsletters will be shipped.
Fantastic. Here's where all this comes right down to it. I'm trying to think, how does this help you build a scalable infrastructure for creating high performance teams? Because ultimately, that's the goal.
So essentially, if you build a machine that consistently delivers, it increases your ability to do certain tasks regularly. Let's take role launches, for example. When you launch a position, you focus on three things: the goal, deliverable, skill sets. The goals of the role are the outcomes that the overall person you hire will have to do. The skill sets are the skills required for that person to actually reach those outcomes. The deliverables are the time-bound, smaller deliverables that will enable the person to reach the bigger goal. If you take that approach to launching positions, you can use the skill sets to build structured interviews with preset questions and a rubric. This ensures that you're directly aligning the things you're qualifying to specific skills that are needed. You can take the overall deliverables and turn them into a roadmap. This then becomes a 12-month roadmap broken down week by week into what someone actually has to do to be successful. And given the rise of language models, when a pivot occurs, it's really easy for their manager to update the constraints and provide an updated roadmap. This ensures that as an employee, you know what's expected of you. As a manager, you have clear insights into not only what your new hire is doing, but also what metrics are being leveraged to drive performance. And so by creating aligned expectations through structured processes and the fact that they're repeatable, you enable yourself to hire, I can't say the best because that's highly suggestive, but you are able to hire in a consistent manner and then manage performance in a consistent manner as well.
It sounds like also set expectations with that new hire on what their performance should look like. How many times we come into new positions and we don't really know what's expected of us? It's kind of like you feel like you're being thrown into the wolves a little bit. So it sounds like it sets expectations all across the board. It focuses and aligns activities and priorities from the very beginning all the way through achievement of goals. So when you're thinking about this, is there like a standardization that starts to happen across the hiring process that's built on these best practices? Or how do you think about that?
So you hit the nail on the head. I want to go back to something you said. Not only does it set expectations, but it allows for internal team members to have a long-term view, in that when you're at an organization and you feel a bit of stress, whether it's on the product side, the engineering side, the leadership side, the immediate need or reaction might be, hey, let's fill this role. But once you take the time to actually think about what deliverables this person might have to deliver, the skill sets, you're essentially building the overall structure and framework to drive their performance and to also to qualify whether or not you actually need this role or do you have a minor pain point. So for your recent question, when it comes to standardization, yes, my general playbook is since 2017, every organization that I've joined, I've taken a 40-day approach. So my first 40 days, the foundations are the same. The activities are different. So the first 30, I focus on understanding the system. Mind you, these are startups. So my first day could be supporting closing a role, opening up a new system, ushering in a tool, hiring, leading certain things such as debriefs. So that's different. But my aim for the first 30 days is to understand the existing hiring system. Whatever is being done, I would love to document it, understand it, and talk to the people that are doing the work while also supporting to understand the why. This is the process a lot thereof, and this is why we do things this way. From there, I take the next 10 days to fill in the gaps. And in the sense of that, I build a roadmap or in some cases a prioritization list of this is what we need to build a predictive or standardized system. And the first step in all of this is standardization. Let's standardize how we launch positions. Let's standardize our interviews. Let's create interviewer training to ensure that we take a consistent approach as an organization. Let's create hiring manager enablement training to ensure that hiring managers are aware of the consistent approach. A point in my recent organization that meant digitizing those, partnering internal trading team. So ensure that no matter when someone joins, they go through onboarding. And if they need a refresher, there's an automated training that they can hop into. So it's essentially streamlining the process, ensuring that you're using the least amount of processes needed to get to the end goal, and standardizing each aspect of recruiting from message campaigns to closing candidates to debriefs to offers. And all of these have their own side quest. And by that, for example, if you're standardizing offers, you may take the approach that I'm very fond of being just very transparent, giving candidates insights into what their offer may look like at the initial interview. That requires a bit of infrastructure. It requires leveraging comp data, alignment with internal parity, leveling structures. And so each one of these systems has a backend that requires quite a bit of partnership and build to make it consistent.
So I'm going to ask a contrarian question here, because the standardization, I'm assuming, on the best practices, and you said evaluate the gaps and fill in the gaps and different things. But you've used the word standardization many, many times over. In one respect, that I completely understand. The other, it makes me feel like, where's the creativity? Where's the innovation? Where's the, I'm going to roll with the flow. I'm interviewing somebody and maybe the standard questions on the interview don't apply like they should. And I'll give you an example. In the contact center industry, there used to be lots of standardization right now, exactly what the agent should do. And it was so standardized that there wasn't any latitude. And here the agents were taking in questions that standard scripts didn't really cover, right? But they were being held accountable if you've got to stay on task. So where's the balance, right, in this, the benefits of the standardization, but also the ability for hiring managers in VP talent acquisition and anybody who's doing the hiring to allow them to have the creativity to interview in a way that they feel is necessary based on just maybe the dynamics of what's happening in that interview at that moment.
That's actually an amazing point. So I'm really glad that you brought that up. Having a standard process allows you to not only be more creative, but to ensure that the basics are covered. And so by, for example, when it comes to starting interviews, I like my team members to have a structured approach. The one that we've been using recently is to introduce yourself. We're all remote. Give it insights into where you're working from. Maybe you have a dog in the background and whatnot, just to ensure that everyone is aware. Now, the standardization of that is an introduction. However, because it's standard, you can be creative and leverage real world insights to provide more of a personalized touch. And also, when it comes to building systems, especially structured interviews, when you're starting from zero, there is quite a bit of work that needs to be done. And so you might build a interview framework that allows you to get insights into a specific skill set. But I would highly, highly encourage you to leave room for innovation. And by that, I mean continuous calibration, where the goal is to take a candidate to the boundary of their knowledge and then see how they react to that at times. And if you're taking that approach, then there are going to be follow-up questions that you don't have written down as part of your initial question. But because you're using a structured system, those follow-up questions will actually be shown on your feedback and review. And through the continuous calibration process, they may actually be added to the interview as a standard practice. So with subject matter expertise, the times, individuals have specific knowledge base, and allowing them to share that knowledge base, allowing the interviewer to go deeper as much as needed, using, again, a structured approach, I find allows for creativity and really puts everyone at ease because the interviewers are aware of what they're looking for. And by setting expectations with the candidate and what you're actually looking for prior to the interview, they can better showcase that skill set.
Well, I imagine, and you tell me, that there's also a bit of comfort in a standardization process. The team kind of interviews, or people within the company, the hiring manager, people on his team that maybe are going to help interview this candidate, they're not professional interviewers. That's not what they do. So they get into these interviews and it's kind of like, let's talk. But if you can give it some structure, then there's an approach that is simple that they can just follow and that they know is going to help them get better results. Is that part of this? Is it part of this is helping people know how to interview, know how to ask the right questions, give them the confidence that they're actually going to do it well, they're going to get the right results, and the whole system, the whole process is going to work better. Like, do you get that comfort zone, I guess? Is that a benefit coming out of this?
100%. The nuance of this is when you're dealing with really seasoned folks, they have a calibrated gut. So they can tell you that, hey, I believe this person, because of the way they've answered X, Y, and Z, are a fit. But at times it's hard for them to teach that. So by creating a system that allows others to be trained on how to ask questions, how to not ask leading questions, how to focus on specific aspects, how to dig deeper with follow-up questions, you enable for a broader group dynamic and learning. And I call it calibrating your gut. You want these seasoned individuals that are SMEs to take the same approach as the other folks so that over time, there's an equalization where we all have the same alignment on, hey, this is what good looks like. This is what we want to bring into the organization. And this is how we know what good looks like.
It makes perfect sense. And I love it. So far, we've focused on the benefits to the company, the organization. But if we could transition to talk about maybe the candidate experience, like this predictive model and the standardization of this process, what does it do to actually enhance the experience for the candidate themselves? And is that important? Is that part of what you're thinking about?
I wholeheartedly believe so. I've been on the other side of this many, many times. For context, as a college student, I think my advisor, maybe he found some gas, but he suggested that I should go through 10 interviews every year, no matter what internship I received. And that really allowed me to just get a whole lot of data on what interviews were and to just build some comfort, as with many things that you practice with. So when it comes to candidates, I strongly believe that it's ideal to set expectations. We want to tell the candidates what we're looking for. And so there are these aspects of the build that require you to set the proper expectations. One of the things that I like to do is provide collateral in the form of a deck to candidates. So these are 7 to 10 page PDFs, presentations that are shared as part of the confirmation email to candidates. And they provide insights into the role, the organization, the values of the company, working norms, and in some cases, how to prepare. This makes it so that as a candidate, you are aware of what competencies are being asked. You may not know the specific questions, but you are aware that you're going to talk to X person. You've looked at their background and they might focus on leadership. They might focus on data structures. So you're better prepared to show up. And it also allows the hiring team to get high fidelity signal. And I say that because if you share your values and your working norms with the candidate, and you inquire about how the values align, and they're not able to answer that, or they don't know the values, it sends a clear signal that they did not do the homework. So I know this is a bit controversial. There were certain teams that just prefer for folks to figure it out. I'm more of the camp of, hey, let's set expectations. Let's be as transparent as possible. And let's see if they provide the responses that we require to showcase that they can do the job confidently.
So in this day and age, if we give them a lot of the information about the company and the requirements of the roles, does that empower them to go out and AI everything and come in? They could do their homework, like cramming for a test. Or is that just easy for a hiring manager to see through?
So is it easy for hiring managers to see through? I'm not sure, but I would hope they used AI. Recently, one of my friends who is also head of talent is building a recruiting interview plan for a specific role. And he reached out to me to identify tools that he can leverage to ensure that candidates were not using AI. After about 2 days, 45 to 50 minute conversations, we aligned on the fact that, hey, it would be ideal for them to use AI. However, not only do we want them to use AI, but we want to call it out and we want to give extra points to the candidates that take this take home, leverage AI, and cite their sources. Because in today's world, if you're not using language models for certain tasks, you're a bit behind. I believe that whether it's recruiting, project management, engineering, individuals that have a strong foundation in language models, various AIs are able to provide at times higher quality work and provide more volume of work because of that enablement. So when you're building it into your interview, I would highly suggest that we leave space for it. Now, if you're talking about glasses that will listen to the interviewer and provide a response, I have a pair of those, or individuals that are leveraging certain AIs in the background and then reading from the screen, those things are highly frowned upon. But in terms of actually using it and calling it out and citing your work, I think that should be a benefit.
I think it's interesting that it's actually a part of the model that it rewards, that it is such a part of everyone's job today. I mean, ChatGPT, it's even writing code these days. So it's going to be a part of almost any job that we have, any role at any company is going to be aided by these language models. So interesting response there. There's something that I think that you had talked about in our previous conversation that you called a continuous evolution loop. And I wanted you to explain that because it was an important part of our previous conversation.
Indeed, the continuous calibration loop, which ensures that no matter what you're doing, you enable space for feedback. On the candidate side, it could be as simple as sending out surveys. On the hiring side, it could be as simple as creating systems to provide questions and receiving those responses to iterate the process. Ideally, you want to get feedback, not just from Glassdoor or other sources, but directly from candidates that interact with your team. On the internal team side, leveraging a system that evaluates the questions that are asked based on the responses and the overall cumulative score that a candidate received, and taking a longer-term approach and looking at that over 12 months to see if the signals we received during the interview align to performance, actual performance. So if someone was rated high and high performer during the interview process because of their aptitude with X, Y, and Z, throughout their professional erudition of the organization, did they showcase that? So by creating systems of feedback loop, you're constantly iterating. When I think about building recruiting systems, it's not just a stagnant process. This is why earlier I shared that trust has to be continuously earned. It's not about placing your faith in it. It's about creating a system that allows you to get the data you need so that you can constantly iterate as needed to get the results that you desire. If you find that you're back in interviews, let's say 80% of the individuals that have completed X number of interviews are scoring really high, but that doesn't translate to the work, then it might be time to evaluate those interviews and ensure that they better align to the actual work that's being done.
I have like three follow-up questions to what you just said, but I want to make sure I ask this question. Because for all of us out here who are really intrigued, really interested in what you're doing, A, I want to make sure I provide a link to your LinkedIn profile so people can reach out to you. But if we're leading talent acquisition in our own companies, we're working with our hiring managers, what are the things that we should take away from this conversation that we could just start thinking about and doing differently already on our own that you've learned through the constant iteration and evolution of this model?
That's a really good question. In terms of some of the things, I want to start by just being clear. It depends on where you are. It depends on what stage of growth you're in. If you have an organization that has a foundational model of recruiting, then you can iterate from there. But I would strongly recommend that you take a look at every part of your recruiting system, how you acquire candidates, how you engage them, how you qualify candidates, how you usher them in, as well as your performance management, and qualify that with quantitative and qualitative information. You want to be able to create gauges that give you insights into what's going on at each step so that you can better understand your approach and then begin to measure and then iterate that approach. That's the overall, I would say. The foundation is the same, no matter what you're recruiting for, no matter what organization you're in. The nuances of how you qualify candidates, how you engage candidates, that's ever evolving, whether you're using a language model or an AI to acquire signals to engage candidates, whether you're qualifying candidates through live collaborative interviews, or again, using a machine. Those aspects of the work are going to shift as they should, but the foundation will remain the same. So essentially taking broad view at what it is that you're currently doing and looking at each part and seeing how each part informs the others will provide the necessary insights needed and will quickly educate you on where you are and what's needed to standardize and then drive predictability moving forward.
I love that. Just something as simple as, hey, let's really break down what we do. There's going to be tremendous learning. And then how important each one, how it relates to the other, how it makes each stage that much more successful, and what are the feedback loops that we're getting at each stage? Like, it just, we don't necessarily think that way. Your brain thinks that way. But I think just going through that process would reveal tremendous insights for anybody. So that's going to be my number one takeaway from our conversation here is like how we can start to all of us start think differently about what we're doing and really analyzing it and trying to learn from it and trying to get feedback from it and asking questions and getting that feedback. Is it okay if we give a link out to your LinkedIn profile that people, if they have questions, can reach out? Because I know there's going to be questions.
Wholeheartedly, please reach out. I believe throughout the Medium and newsletters on LinkedIn, you'll receive all of the insights that I have. But again, this is what I call an ever-evolving system. So if there's something that you've tested out that doesn't work, let me know. If you found a better way to do something, please let me know. One of the reasons I love the tech ecosystem is that we share what we learn. And that enables us all to get better and to provide more value to our organization and to the people that we come in contact with.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on and sharing all this and absolutely making us think differently. The whole goal of this podcast is to take different insights and perspectives and learning and knowledge and share it with each other so that we can be a rising tide that lifts all boats. And you definitely did that today. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the time and just facilitating this. I know we went back and forth a bit. I know we had some amazing conversations prior to this, and I'm just so thankful that you exist and that you're creating content that enables others to share what they've learned and that positively impact the broader ecosystem.